Morning. How are you doing? All right, just to set the record straight, I'm not preaching, I'm just talking, right? I'm just here to share some thoughts and ideas. Yes, right, I'm Tim, and glad to be here. I got to go on an amazing trip the weekend of Labor Day. We actually flew out on Tuesday morning. I went with a group of seven other guys. We flew into Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and then basically did a five-day hike throughout the Wind River mountain range. I'd never seen it, really was not familiar with it, but an incredible, amazing journey with guys from other churches around the area. Some of you guys know Craig Heigrich and Steve Brand, Chris Grubb, Jim Moore, some other guys. That it was amazing, life-changing. Probably the most life-changing was one day we decided to climb up this col or pass between two peaks that was at about 12,500 feet, and from the bottom we looked at it and said, I don't think that's climbable, and especially not without ropes and all this other stuff. But we decided, well, we saw some guys coming down one side, you know, it's glacier at the top, and then it was kind of like just looked like sand and gravel, and then kind of boulders that had kind of fallen over the years. And so we decided to go up, and some of the guys went up and tried to go up the sand, but it had ice glacier actually below it, so every step you were sliding backward. And some of us decided to go up the boulders. And about halfway up that hill, I realized, you know, I could die here. I mean, this could really be the end. And ironically, it was actually 21 years earlier, the very day my son died. And so I kind of thought, this is kind of poetic. My wife will be able to tell people that, yeah, he died on the anniversary of our son's death. But God brought me through all that. But anyway, and I don't really want to talk about that today, but it really did give me time to think about who we are and what we are. And in fact, we did the little devotionals every morning. And the one that I did was I picked up a rock off the ground. And now we were surrounded by mountain ranges as far as the eye could see in both directions, kind of in a valley between these, and they were all granite. I mean, just amazing amounts of rock, and over the centuries that a lot of the rocks had fallen down, and so the valleys were full of boulders and even pebbles or whatever. And so I just held up a rock and I said, you know, you see this rock and you look at it and realize it was formed over thousands of years as sediment kind of, you know, had layered and created these striations in the rock, and that actually God knew every single one of these stripes and when it was, you know, laid down, every particle that was there and where it came from, you know, how it started its journey to that point in time and where it was created into this rock. And this little rock was just one little fragment of these boulders that we've seen that just have tumbled and waters washed them and glaciers have moved them. And you could even see in the big slabs of rock where rocks had been drugged by glaciers and just created these, you know, ditches, trenches through them. And I said, you know, God knows this little rock by name. He knows exactly where it was formed, how it was formed, how it, you know, evolved, how its life went from particles of sand or dust to this little rock in this little valley, and it is special to him. And that's us. That's who we are. That you know, it's not just our life, it's all of our ancestors. Going back to the very beginning, God orchestrated and wove their lives together with all of the people and all the relationships and all the interactions that they had for centuries and millennia, however long it was, who knows. God knows. He planned and orchestrated all that to bring us to who we are and where we are and why we're here. To me, that's amazing. In Galatians 5, it says, brothers, you were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. And in thinking about that scripture, you know, freedom's a funny thing. I grew up in a college town, Clemson University. My dad was a professor there. So one of the things I saw kind of over and over again was the kids who, first time, you know, freshman at college, just getting out from underneath mom and dad's roof, and the choices they made typically reflected what, you know, what had happened to them up to that point. A lot of kids who were, you know, I'll call them overprotected, the classic example was the preacher's kid, right? The preacher's kid who's now at college, mom and dad aren't there supervising anymore, and they get themselves into all kinds of trouble, right? They spend their entire month's budget in, you know, one weekend, or they you know, back then you could drink alcohol at 18, so they overdo it with alcohol, or they, you know, just wild living or craziness or whatever. And I think we all in our lives have had that story, right, to some degree or another, where, you know, we did the right thing or did what we were supposed to do because people were watching or you know, made us do it or whatever. And then once you kind of are free, you kind of go, hey, I can do anything I want to. And in fact, that's what, you know, Jesus says here, is that he set us free. We can do anything we want, anything. We're totally free. We've been set free. That's an amazing feeling. And it's funny that in the same scripture, you know, in Galatians 5, where it says, you were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. You know, obviously human nature is, what happens? You have freedom. The first thing you think about is, I could eat pizza all night. I mean, I can buy all the candy in the store, you know, whatever it is. Why is it always self-indulgence? It's because it's human nature, right? That's who we are. That's how we are. Here's what I find really ironic about this passage, is it says, brothers, you were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. What happens if you indulge the sinful nature? You become enslaved. You're not free anymore, right? I mean, that's exactly what can happen, right? You basically think, oh, this seems appealing, this seems awesome, whatever it is, and so I'm just going to play, you know, I'm just going to dabble in this area. And then pretty soon, you know, and the scripture even talks about it, you know, that's basically the genesis of this big monster called sin that will entrap us and enslave us. And suddenly, we're not free anymore. We're enslaved. And Jesus didn't call us to that, right? He called us to be free. We've spent a good bit of time, David and Tim and some of the other folks, we've spent a lot of time here lately talking about church. You know, what is church all about? Why do we have church? What's the purpose of it? You know, why do it? There are a lot of different philosophies around the world. You know, we're surrounded by a lot of different ideas and philosophies. The one I kind of grew up with was, you know, church was the place where you go to kind of get browbeat into doing what's right. You know, that you kind of get guilted into, yeah, I don't want people to look at me like I'm a bad guy or whatever, so I'm going to do, you know, these things that the preacher's saying that I should do, or the teachers. Right, and that's a culture, that's a church culture that's very common, right? Kind of a compulsory, kind of a guilt-driven, you know, kind of a conformance, right? You want to conform because we don't allow that here in this church, right? I mean, we don't allow the whatever differences you might have. But I don't think that's what Jesus intended with church, right? It's almost like if you look at that, it's almost like the same way you could do parenting the same way, right? You could just say, no, it's my way or the highway. And in fact, that's easier a lot of times than real parenting, where it's really a relationship and you're really teaching and training and allowing, you know, your kids to make mistakes and learn from the mistakes. That's a lot tougher, but it's actually a much better way. And in fact, those were the kids, when I would see them at college, typically did really well. Right, the ones who had been taught and trained to be responsible and to do the right thing because it's the right thing, and to be self-motivated and to, you know, to have a great attitude towards challenges and other things. It was typically the kids who were controlled at home and told to shut up and you know toe the line and those kinds of things. Those were the ones that really struggled when they actually became free. Honestly, church background for me personally, that was more of what I went through, was more of the conform, do it because we said it. I mean, yes, there was some heart there, but then when I got into an environment where I don't have to do what anybody says anymore, I didn't do what, and a lot of times I didn't do what I should be doing, right? I just kind of enjoyed my freedom to indulge my sinful nature, you know, in its various forms. And I think here's one of the things I love about Cornerstone is David is determined that we're not going to use guilt, we're not going to use compulsion, we're not going to use expectation or any of those kinds of tools to build this church. We're going to use grace rather than guilt. We're going to use compassion rather than compulsion. That we're going to use devotion rather than duty to motivate us, to motivate ourselves, right? And I mean, this is not about, the person up here, David or whoever, motivating us. This is about us connecting with God and saying, God, what would you have us do? Who do you want us to be? What do we do? And I think that's amazing. I think it also can be a stumbling block in that we personally, therefore, have to own what are we doing? What are we actually doing in our lives? And so it's in some ways a double-edged sword, because it's awfully easy to indulge the sinful nature rather than to go, God, thank you for this freedom that you've given us. How do we move forward? What do we do? How do we live our lives? And so I just want to share some of the things that for me have been challenges over the years, and maybe it'll help you. I like to use marriage as an example. It's awfully easy. Marriage is hard, right? I mean, it's a relationship. It's a long-term, lifetime commitment. And sometimes it's just easier to kind of get numb and just go with the flow and not really deal with challenges or interact at a deeper level, but it's not fulfilling, right? I mean, we're surrounded by, I think, marriages that are that way. That's not what God intended. That's not what he designed. What he really designed is that I would give myself, devote myself to my wife, and that she would do the same, and that I'm not going to keep some score sheet of, well, I did, X, Y, and Z, and she's only done, A and half a B, right? I mean, that's not how it works. It never works that way. It never works because it's not godly, right? Godly is I'm going to put her needs ahead of mine, period. Unconditional, right? I'm going to serve her and take care of her and do everything in my power to make her shine, regardless of whether she's doing reciprocating or anything else. That's tough. It's hard, but that's what God's talking about. I think even with, we're the bride of Christ, right? As the church, and sometimes it's hard to get your mind around that, but if you think about our relationship with Jesus, first of all, he's already proven. I mean, I do this on a regular basis in my prayer time. Is I go, okay, God, it doesn't matter what happens to me. It doesn't matter if every day of my life is pain and suffering. You've already done enough to prove that you love me with all your heart. You've already done enough. So if, let's just start right there. I mean, there's nothing else that I really need to say, to God about it. He's already proven it. So I just got to move forward, right? By reciprocating, by being devoted to Jesus, by putting his needs ahead of mine and his desires ahead of my agenda. And that's hard to do, easy to say, but that is what I feel that God's calling us to, similar to a marriage. I think about family. I jokingly say that, when you have a kid, it's a 20-year sentence. And with Jamie, I jokingly say, but his is 30 to life because he's special needs. But anyway, it's definitely a joke. But it is a commitment, right? And there's a couple different ways you can think about your kids. One way is, it's a 20-year sentence, right? Maybe I'll survive this and my youth will be gone and I'll be old and they stole it from me, right? I mean, you can definitely fall into that. Or you can think, I'm going to do everything in my power to give them all that they need to be successful in their life. And I'm going to put my needs on a back burner to do that. I'm going to spend time with them when I don't feel like I've got time. I'm going to say no to opportunities and to situations and to people that I could go. I could go fishing and play golf and, you know, do all these other fun things. But if my kids suffer because of that and I don't really give them and pour myself into them, how fulfilling is that really going to be long term, you know, for them and for me, right? I mean, I trust me, in the business world, I'm surrounded by guys, fortunately not close and in my company, but, you know, customers, et cetera. I've been surrounded my whole career by guys who've made that choice, who go, you know, work their tail off, and on the weekends they go play golf or whatever, and their kids, they just never really connect with them, and it's sad. It's really sad. It reminds me of the woman, I can't remember her name, the woman who did it was a cancer nurse for years and years and used to interview people who were, you know, basically terminal. And one of the things she would always ask them is, you know, what would you change? What would you do differently if you could live your life over? And she said she never, ever had a man say to her, well, I wish I had worked more. Right? Ever. I mean, they always regretted that they'd spent so much time doing stuff that was actually so meaningless at the end of the day. And I like to think about that when I think about this, you know, situation. Like, how am I living my life? What am I doing? Why? I think about the parable of the sower. I think most of us in this room, you know, we're kind of already past the, you know, the seed that falls on the path that's hard, and the birds come and snatch it away, and, you know, we just never really connect with God. I think we're kind of past the rocky soil, most of us, you know, where the seed falls on rocky soil and the sun, you know, it comes up quickly because the soil is warm, but then the sun comes up kind of, you know, hot and it scorches the plant because it's got no root. You know, the next one is kind of the one that, this is the one, right? I mean, it's the weeds, right? The worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, the desire for other things grow up. And that can happen at any point, right? I mean, you know, you could have been a faithful follower who was devoted for years and years, and then you just kind of, I don't know, you run out of gas, you grow weary, you get distracted, you do a transition, you know, your kids move out, and now you're empty nesters, and finally you're, yay, I can do whatever I want, and it's so easy to let the weeds grow up and the thorns and choke it, you know, choke us out. And so I really fight that. I worry about that. So I really want to be aware of it, right? It's not like I'm, you know, worried that way, but I'm constantly thinking, how can I reignite the inner fire? You know, how can I make sure that I'm not chasing after stuff that's worthless? I think about the church in Laodicea. You know, Jesus said, I wish you were hot or cold, but because you're neither one, I'm going to spit you out because you're lukewarm. You know, and I think that can happen to me in my life where I am, because it's easy to just, once again, get tired or bored or interested in other stuff and kind of just grow cold. Not cold, but lukewarm, kind of halfway, kind of marginal, right? Half-hearted. I remember, you know, in Judges, the book of Judges, where it talks about, you know, this judge, he followed Jesus or followed the Lord, but not wholeheartedly, right? The ones who really stood out were the ones who were wholehearted. I also think about some of my heroes in the Bible. This helps inspire me, like, you know, Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh. These were two of the spies, you know, that went out and looked at the promised land. And these, of all the others, these two were the only two that said, we can take it. We can do this. Years later, when they actually entered the promised land, these guys were like in their 80s. And it said, you know, they were as vigorous and zealous for God as they had been in their youth. That's what I want. I want to be that guy, right? I mean, I don't know how exactly you do that, but I know it's not by growing dull and lazy and complacent. Right, it's something else. It's some other choice that I've got to make. Now, I do want to say, though, the Laodicea, what's interesting is Jesus said, I want to spit you out of my mouth, but he didn't say, therefore I reject you. And no, he says, I stand at the door and I knock. I knock. Please open the door. Let me in. He wants in. In Galatians 6, it says, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. You know, basically, you reap what you sow, right? That's all about what we're actually doing. And then later on, that verse, it says, do not grow weary in doing good, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest. Right? It's we have to fight the weariness. We have to figure out how to reignite the passion. Do not give up. In Luke 18, it's talking about the end times. And I find it interesting that at the very end it says, however, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? You know, to me that says, it's possible for your faith to kind of fade, right? I mean, it's possible. So you got to fight that, right? You have to reignite, rebuild. And how do you build faith? Reading the Word, praying, being around people who are trying to build their faith, right? I mean, that's really why we do church, isn't it? It's because I can't do it on my own. I will fade. I will get lost and distracted and off base and everything else. But it's not because you guys are browbeating me into doing it, right? It's because you're on the same journey I'm on. It's because we're all trying to encourage each other on this journey. In Matthew 24, when talking about the end times, Jesus says, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. That's just, wow, that's scary to me, right? I mean, your love can grow cold. And you can kind of see that pattern, you know, even in the things Tim shared today, of something bad happens, we all kind of rally together, we connect with each other, we discard differences, we are passionate about what really matters, and then over time, little things start to annoy us and start to anger us and frustrate us. Before you know it, we're enemies with each other. It's all about hate and about anger and about, you know. But see, if you think about it, Screwtape Letters, have you read the Screwtape Letters? You know, long ago. But the principle is so true. Satan and his forces of evil, they have a strategy for every single one of us, right? And that strategy may change, right? As a young, you know, person who meets somebody, you know, let's say you were in college, my story, I meet somebody in college, he's studying the Bible, you know, learning how to, you know, maybe make the decision to be a Christian, and he starts sharing with me some of the stuff he's learning, right? Satan's strategy, snatch that seed out of there before it takes root, right? Send the birds in to go do distractions and all kinds of crazy stuff. In fact, what happened to me was, in the office also was an avowed atheist who was also a brilliant mathematician and logic guy. And so every day he would come to me with arguments about how God couldn't possibly exist because X, Y, or Z, right? So that was Satan's strategy for me at that point in my life of snatch the seed before it can sprout. When that failed, transition to the next one, right? Have this guy be totally fired up for a while, just completely sold out, you know, sell everything, you know, follow Jesus, flunk out of school, whatever, just so that after a few months or, you know, a year or two, he can kind of sit back and go, what has this really gained me? Have I really, you know, has this helped me? No, and discard it and move on, right? The plant withers because either persecution or because it's hard or whatever, right? Once you get past that, then what's Satan's strategy? Let's use warm water. Give them a warm bath, right? Put them on a nice float out in the ocean and let them kind of just drift off, right? I mean, isn't that what's going on here? Isn't it a battle with the forces of evil who are constantly trying to figure out how to separate us from God, how to totally, you know, end it for us? And of course, they also want to use us to end it for other people, right? They don't want us to share the seed with people because if we do, you know, they might have an opportunity. They don't want us to here was what something happened to me the other night. I got back late from that trip. It was like after midnight at the airport. I see this couple with two young kids, and they're arguing. I mean, just, ooh. And I'm like, oh, should I say something? You know, what should I do? How can I kind of insert, you know, some grace into this situation? And I tried. I mean, I walked up and I smiled at them and I, you know, tried to be friendly with them. But they were, and understandably, the kids were tired and everything else. But I just was thinking, you know, how, God, can I use this opportunity to, you know, not necessarily save them or anything else. Who knows? They could have been a preacher and a preacher's wife, whatever. Just to give some grace to them and help them. And part of what really touched me about it was one of the kids was a little boy, and the way the dad was holding him, he looked just like my son, Bo, who I used to hold that way many, many years ago. Anyway, you know, Satan wants to keep us from sharing our hearts, sharing our lives. You know, he wants to block us. He wants us to be afraid or too busy or too distracted or anything besides opening our mouths and loving people. I look at the scriptures. You know, if you look up the term stand firm, there's about 12 scriptures about standing firm. You know, and it's stand firm and put on the full armor of God. You know, it's stand firm and resist the devil. You know, I think that's a key thing for us where we are in our life is, you know, as a church, we've got to make some decisions. We've got to stand firm. I love, you know, heroes like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? These guys, they stood firm. And they said, you know, what was cool to me was they said, you know, to the emperor, they said, you know, our God can save us from this fire, but even if he does not, we're not going to bow down and worship. I mean, that to me is, that's awesome. I think about practical things that we can do that, you know, that I try to focus on. Number one is pray. And you know, Steve Gooch has been such an inspiration in this way that it's all about prayer. I mean, prayer is so powerful. And Satan doesn't want us to believe it. He doesn't want us to see it. He wants us to feel like either it's a waste of time or it's scary or anything to keep us from doing it. But it's the most powerful thing we can actually do on a day in, day out. And it's not something that we have to stop and drop and fall on our knees all the time. It's right here, right now, when we're in church. Be praying for people's hearts to be, you know, softened, for people's lives to be healed, for people to maybe hear something that for the first time they finally get it, you know, that pray for marriages of, you know, people who are sitting right in this room who are really going through difficulty, that their hearts would be open, that God can get in there and change that. Pray for difficult situations with kids, you know, where their hearts can be softened and they can kind of have the aha moment. I mean, there's just so many ways that God is just kind of waiting for us to pray so we can pour out his blessings. I think here in this congregation, I think one of the things that I see that's missing, and Vicki and I are committed to changing this where we sit, is the older Christians helping the younger Christians. You know, there were so many people that helped Vicki and I when we were young and had young kids and difficulties in our marriage and difficulties with finances and, you know, pretty much difficulties upon difficulties. So many people sacrificed to get with us, to teach us. You know, I can remember Paul and Candy Ramsey, Candy and Paul on the phone at their house with Vicki and I on the phone at our house late at night talking about some stupid thing that Vicki and I had gotten stuck on, some, you know, dumb, I'm sure it was my fault, dumb argument that we just couldn't get over, and they were willing to do that. They were willing to get on the phone and talk it through with us until we, right, let's do that, people, let's do it. It really changes people's lives. It changed our life. I think it's about service. And I think this congregation, we serve. I mean, we serve a lot. But I don't think we serve each other enough. You know, I think our focus tends to be out, which is awesome. And I don't think we should stop doing that. But I think we should also figure out how to serve one another. And I mean, I hold up, you know, the Hannahs and their, you know, their life group. They're a great example of that. And I know it's happening in other places, but I think we, you know, we should challenge ourselves. What are we doing to serve, to give, to love? I think giving, you know, giving is about, and I'm not just talking about money. Giving is ultimately about God has poured out, you know, so much on us. And I've talked about it before, you know, that our body is an estimated 10 billion cells, each with its own purpose and function. Those are all blessings from God, and it's not just a one-time gift. He's renewing our bodies day by day, you know, replacing the dead cells with new cells. I even read recently that our gut, your gut has something like 10 trillion organisms, that if it weren't for them, you couldn't digest your food, you couldn't fight off disease, you couldn't, you basically couldn't survive. You couldn't absorb the nutrients that you need to. Think about that. I mean, that's incredible. God is just pouring out. I mean, we're in this, like, swimming in a sea of miracles on a daily basis. We don't even see it. We take it for granted, but don't do that. Try not to do that, right? Try to think about how much blessing God has given us, and then try to have it overflow out of our vessel into the people's lives around us. I love it where Paul says, you know, first of all, you entrusted yourself to the Lord and then to us. And I think it's the same way here, right? I think we have to entrust our lives to God, that he's already fixed it. He's already created victory for us, right? All we have to do is stand firm till the end, right? And encourage everybody else around us. They can also do that. They can also participate in this amazing victory that we have for all eternity. We'll be able to cheer and shout and celebrate and dance and, you know, whatever else we want to do, because God has already chosen us and elected us and redeemed us and saved us. We just need to enjoy it. In giving, I think about a giving, you know, that's really investing, right? I mean, it's not just investing money into the growth of the church, but it's actually into the lives of each individual here. It's into the lives of the people that we come in contact with every day. It's giving ourselves. It's giving of what God's blessed us with. And you can't outgive God, right? And I mean, the more I've committed to giving, the more God blesses me with. So much that I'm shocked. I'm amazed. So to wrap it up, one of my favorite scriptures in Romans 12:1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Right? I mean, that's what he wants. He wants us to be so devoted to him that we're just giving back. We're giving back. We're giving back out of gratitude, out of heartfelt thankfulness, right? That's what he wants. Even when it's hard, even when it hurts, even when things aren't going the way we think they ought to, the more we just give back, the more we start to see and realize all the blessings that God's given us and how grateful we ought to be and how amazing he is. Thank you. Let's close with a prayer.